Hello, everyone, and welcome to the commentary for Genesis Avalon Patriot, episode 16. Oh my gosh, we're here. We're in like we're well into the back half of the show, but yeah, like we're getting closer and closer to the midpoint.
The numbers keep getting bigger.
They do. They do, in fact, get bigger. Anyway,
the way they do.
Yeah. So the mathematician next to me is Chris Bayes, my co-stoofer, co-writer, and I am Kat Pride, your host for this evening's entertainment, and your I am the director. I am the co-writer and co-creator and co-stoofer.
I code nothing yeah, on the directing front.
No, you're not big into that. So. Anyway, so so where we left off, this is another episode that's taking place in the U.S. So where anybody might remember, in episode 14, Ben found his dad.
Yep.
And his dad is not doing the best after having sort of gone right off the edge. Definitely cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. But I have to say, this is one of my favorite scenes I think I've written of just like the two of them talking. Because even though there's clearly something wrong with John here, Juwan and Ben do such a great job of playing the interplay of like, sometimes that is his dad, and then sometimes it's not his dad.
Yeah.
And it's just very good. And it also, you know, the intensity ramps up really naturally. And also, I'm going to just say this now, because I'm going to say it several times, and I'm not sorry. Ben Hernandez acted the hell out of this episode, and he is so awesome, and I am so privileged we have him on the cast.
He is so good.
There is a scene, the scenes at the end of this episode with him, just, I cried.
No,
I cried. I did.
This was, I mean, like, I teared up a really intense episode.
In general, there's a lot of stuff that we talk about in this that's very intense. I wanted to make sure that, so, you know, we outlined the episode, the show, and we knew where we were going with it, but I knew that there were things that we were setting up at the end of season one that would have been very easy to just drop. And I was really glad that this episode gives you kind of time to breathe and to pick up those pieces and to see really where they go.
That was the distraction. It's, you know, it's set up.
Yes.
It's setting up.
It is setting up, and then there's obviously action that's happening later in the episode, but
you're too proud. And now you want to do
something. I do remember vaguely seeing Ben stupid tweet ages ago about how he gets to say things in this to his stage dad that he would never say to his real dad. And I'm like,
fair.
That's why I wrote it, though, was so that you could say all that all that stuff.
No negotiating. So I did what I had to do.
But not use that again, I just the idea of, and I've been feeling this hard because I've been so like burnt out lately. It's so easy when you feel beaten down and burnt out that like you just you don't have any kindness left anymore.
You're not a mean person.
But you just feel like I can't afford to think the best of somebody anymore.
It puts you in a very reactionary mindset.
It does, and I feel like that's where, like, I feel like that is really where John was in that scene, and it was like, I like the way it comes to a head and the fact that Ben's just kind of like, you know what, fine, whatever. But is that really fine? Is that really whatever, Ben? We'll see. So this scene is the one that I really wanted to write, that I told you about. It was originally in the plan for the season. We were not going to really go into it. I don't even think in the original outline for 12 we had Carrie shooting the steward.
No.
I think she was not going to be part of it.
It was something that came up in the process of writing it.
Yeah, when you're like breaking down the story and I'm sitting there like just plowing through that those scenes and I'm like, well, now I've blocked that. Because so for anyone who's curious about how I think about things as a writer and as a director, I started out as an actor in college, so that's my background. I'm an actor, so I've also directed a little bit stage wise and so a lot of my way that I look at a scene is I block it mentally in my head. I position the dialogue and the blocking just like I would take a scripted position on stage. And when we break down stories and we outline them, it's sort of like a combination of storyboarding and blocking.
Yes.
Because you see things in storyboard.
I see things in storyboard.
And I see things in terms of blocking. So as we were writing that episode, I realized I had physically moved these characters to a section of this layout for the prison that I had in my head.
Yep.
And I knew where they were. And I was like, there's no way we get out of this without... something going wrong.
Somebody shooting something or somebody being shot.
Exactly. Which we hit both of those things in that episode because we shot Julian. So, so it was, when we did it, I was like, I don't want to just let that hang. I don't want it to seem like, you know, there's, I didn't want it to seem like
kids that need
there were no consequences to what she did.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Or that, like, a normal person.
Yeah.
She's a very,
she is.
Very
I mean,
normal person. That a normal person could just be in that kind of a situation.
Absolutely. And
not have any PTSD from it.
Yeah. Like, that's not. It's not really accurate. So I wanted to make sure that we came back to it and we had Carrie talk about it. And I also really liked that this gave me an opportunity to kind of spell out more of the lore of where we are in terms of this United States compared to where you know, what Jaina remembers leaving. And writing this, you know, years and years after the original and watching where America, as we know it today, has gone.
Yeah.
It was tough talking about things like rationing insulin, knowing damn well that that is a reality for
real,
a lot of people
yeah.
in this country, and it shouldn't be. It's ridiculous, and I just wanted to.
It was an old.
I really wanted to play through the.
We realized.
I wanted you, the audience, to recognize that we are much closer to dystopia than we think we are.
Yes.
It is very easy for Americans to think that we are in the best country in the world. I don't know how many people I have listening to the show at this point that are in the growth space of their mind where they are willing to listen to new things and challenge their notions. I'd like to hope that some of you are in here and that you're listening to the commentary. And if so, I hope this gives you something to think about because that was the goal.
Yeah.
I'm not saying America is the worst and America is doomed. Otherwise, I wouldn't name the show Patriot.
Yeah.
And the central thesis of the show would not be about what makes a patriot versus a totalitarian versus a terrorist.
Yeah.
Like, we wouldn't make that the central thesis of the show if we were not intending to still have hope in America
and
its mission and its dream.
Another part of this character beat with Carrie that I like that we added is we're talking about revolution. We're talking about citizens rising up against governments, which is something that you see, like, everywhere in the real world. Even currently in world politics, you're seeing multiple areas in the world where just normal civilians are leaving whatever their day-to-day
yes,
is
yeah.
to fight a government.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Be that their own government or an invading government.
Yeah.
And what kind of a toll does that have on a person who maybe was just a reporter, maybe somebody who in their day-to-day before the war advocated for peaceful solutions, would have never thrown the first punch
yeah.
or thrown any punch at all, who was very turn the other cheek. But when you are at war, when you are in a violent revolution, you know, socialists like to talk about when the revolution comes, as if the revolution that's coming is some sort of peaceful handoff.
Or like
the reins.
Or like
people.
The revolution's going to show up and announce itself and go, "Hi, I'm the revolution. Please sign up for the revolution fighting now."
Yeah.
And you
and
will be
fighting,
given,
I mean, we're going to go
going
door
to go,
door and have intense conversations where no violence will be done.
And the reality
this is a violent revolution that Carrie finds herself in that has not been a violent revolution the whole time she's been fighting.
Right, right.
She's been fighting in it and trying to keep it from being a
and
violent
this
revolution.
This is the first time where the violence
has
personally touched her.
Personally hit her. And what kind of effect does that have on a person?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I wanted to get at with this, is that
I had to kill
is that
close to me and
when you talk about things like radical change to the system of government, radical change to the systems of society that we live in, sometimes you can do that peacefully without throwing a punch. But most times, some sort of violence is going to happen. How do you cope with being asked to do violence in the name of the revolution you support?
Yeah, absolutely. And like one of the things we touched on that I think Jaina just said, because as per usual, Laura and Em are just acting the hell out of the scene and we're talking over them. That's fine. They knew that going in. They know that about me. But one of the things that I wanted to also touch on was, you know, we had Jaina go through, had Jaina go through a hell of a ringer in the first three seasons of Avalon, but especially season two. Season two is the darkest part of her life.
Oh, for sure.
She loses Z. She has to kill Rox.
Yeah.
And it takes her another two seasons to find out Roxy was in there all along. And she had rationalized that the reason she was able to kill Nox was because it wasn't Roxy. And the lesson she learns in finding out it always was Roxy there was always a part of her in there, and I rocked her to her foundation. Yep. And I mean, episode 45 is easily my favorite episode I've ever directed of a show ever, of Jaina just completely in the other world, going through the literal gauntlet to get her best friend back when she realizes there's a second chance to get her back. But Jaina still hasn't unpacked a lot of the violence that she perpetuates.
And she knows, she does.
And she constantly blames herself. But this is the first time where she has to wrestle with it on a very human level with someone, where she talks to Carrie and is like, look, I'm not the best to give you advice on this because I have killed people.
Yeah.
And they're not just demons, they are people. And it's hard and there's no good answers. But I love that they have that moment of kind of recognizing maybe the thing that makes you human is knowing that you're not okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a really good miniseries that was on TNT a couple years ago about Fauna Hodel, who was a woman who thought she was most likely related to the Black Dahlia killer. But it starred Chris Pine in this fictional role of a journalist. The show's called I Am the Night. But one of the best things they deal with is his PTSD because he's a Korean War vet. And one of the things that really struck me, and then this was like, I watched it way after I'd already written all these scenes, was that he says, they don't tell you how good it's going to feel to kill, and they don't teach you how to put yourself back together and to come back.
They don't tell you how to turn it off.
God. Yeah, and I really feel like this whole sequence with Carrie, Jaina, and then Evan losing his temper here is that whole thing of nobody teaches you how to come back, and nobody teaches you what a new normal looks like, because the reality is nobody knows what normal looks like.
Yeah.
Normal is an illusion.
Yeah. Normal is a construct.
Exactly. Normal is right now. But 2 years from now, that won't be normal anymore.
Yeah.
And I just... Also, I wanted to have these three in a scene together where they actually were talking about this kind of stuff for ages. I just never thought I'd have the opportunity to do it in the story.
It's all part of the
job. I was really glad that we got the chance to do it.
The good news is that once you learn how to do rotations in ER,
especially because, Evan's always a breath of fresh air. Anytime I hear Mark's voice, I smile, even when he's mad.
You're just happy.
I was always happy to hear Mark. But one of the things that we both talked about was we wanted to make it clear that everybody in this fight is some version of tired, worn out, exhausted, burnt out,
put at the end, like at their wits end.
But at the same time, meeting Jaina and meeting Ben is pulling them out of it in little ways.
Yeah.
Everybody's getting something else out of that conversation with them, and it's making them fight again.
Yeah.
Which that's really awesome. And
you could do that in a superhero story. That's like exactly the point of the superhero is to be that kind of a person.
But as I just found out, as I just found out last week, because I was at the
DE and Icon.
I got to be at the Galactic DE and Icon in Philly, which was amazing. There is a real person like that. There are lots of real people like that. Kate Mulgrew is one of those people.
Yeah.
I got to meet Captain Janeway for a few minutes. More importantly, I got to listen to her talk to people. And hell if she isn't the fieriest person you've ever met in your life. And she is convinced we can fight fascism and fight oppression. We can have a better world. And it left me feeling jazzed up and ready to go back into the fight. And I haven't felt that way in a while. Working on the show is the way that I express my activism, but that can be hard. And it was just like, it was cool to see that what we're doing in this does happen in real life. There are people like that around you. You may not realize it. You may not find them right away, but it's that whole Mr. Rogers look for the helpers thing.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like that's a variant of that. If you feel too burnt out, if you feel like the fight's gone on too long and you can't fight anymore,
look for the people doing little acts.
Yeah. And find the people who still are fighting.
Yeah.
Ask them why they're fighting. And if you have to say, I don't know how to keep doing this right now, because they'll tell you how to keep doing it. And I feel like we all can do that for each other. What's that stupid saying that you always say about the boats?
Oh, a rising tide raises all boats.
Yeah, that one. It's that.
Yeah.
and the supply chain lines have been diverted to
Fort. Oh, and this is the part of the episode where I show the fact that I work in supply chain logistics in my day job, because I went ham on this.
Supply chain logistics.
Oh, there's so much in here, guys.
That's real job.
My real job. My real job is all over this scene. Whenever they're talking about medication, and especially the hospitals and how they work, because it's very real.
The next story needs to be set at theme park, so I should just go into my.
There you go. There we go. That or Tilly's gonna email me and be like, "Did you ever want to do a soap set in a hospital that's a medical procedural?" Oh my god, no, I don't want to do that. I'm not that good at it. I'm not that good at it.
Be set at a theme park opening in a year.
I love it.
It's all about the marketing of a theme park. Yeah, I feel comfortable.
Yeah. Which means getting supplies. I do like that we established that there's a media blackout. You're all civilians. Like that's part of why we picked.
Oh, yeah.
That's part of why you and I picked Dannemora Prison up in upstate New York. I knew where it was, and I knew because my family lives around there. And I knew that there's like, if you want to, media blackout in the Catskills is super easy.
Yeah, because there's nothing's up there.
Getting in or out. Like, and there's no signal, as we found out. You accidentally pick up French or Canadian signal sometimes.
And in America, and then your phone is like, you're in Canada right now. And you're like, no?
Yeah.
And if the local newspaper doesn't report on it, that's it. Yeah. That's the grand totality of information.
So it's definitely a case of the Stewart Party, you know, specifically Tom and Nick, so Tunano and Inerta, they're very aware of what they're doing to the point where they've clearly thought, how would I execute my goals and initiatives in a way that keeps the media out of the way? Not just how do I, you know, buy the media? How do I keep the media totally unaware of what's happening? Because the media is the lens by which we all view everything, and if they're not reporting on it, it may as well not happen.
Well, I mean, that's a real-world thing, too. Mm-hmm. You see that in a lot of places when it comes to things that government agencies don't want to be public knowledge, be that places like Soviet Russia or the People's Republic of North Korea, where things don't get reported on because the state controls the media, or places where the media is not state controlled but just state leaned on.
Yeah, or
a lot of things in American history weren't found out about until 40, 50 years later because the government leaned on the media.
Yeah, or as we're seeing currently, you don't have to be part of the government to have a state interest.
Yeah.
Because when capitalism is basically your form of government at this point. Yeah. A functional government. You don't need to be the US press secretary leaning on CNN or MSNBC. You just need to be a rich person who's got enough influence and money to tell the New York Times.
Yeah.
That they should be reporting differently.
Newspaper.
Or to buy the newspaper. Yeah. So, but yeah, there's a ton in this episode, in the scene to unpack in general. Like, there's a lot we didn't even go into, like Jaina starting her religious journey, and that was I thought a pretty cool thing too. But like, we can go into that another episode. Like,
we've done it.
We've been new.
Our English good bro, yeah, guys.
As a Southerner would say, you seen it.
Seen it. I'm fixing to do it real good. Well,
there you go. I like that.
There are stewards everywhere.
Oh, okay. And here we are in Youngstown, Ohio, which that was a fun one. I had to go find out how to say it because I wanted to say Youngstown, and then I was like, oh no, that's not right. Like, Ohioans.
Immediately out myself as somebody who's never been to Ohio.
Exactly. So yeah, so and this is like one of my advice things to like anybody who's a YouTube commentary person or a podcaster in the making. For the love of God, if you've never actually heard someone from an area say something, please look it up. Spend the time to find out. I heard an Aussie say the word lingerie is lingerie the other day, and I just about died.
If you are not from New York, it's Houston.
Yeah.
If you're from New York, it's Houston. The rest of the world says Houston. When you talk about the city in Texas, that's Houston. When you talk about the street in New York, that's Houston. I had to learn that one the hard way.
There's a bunch of places in Boston like that, too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But
a mighty army of
anyway two. What are we talking about? Oh yeah, Ben and John about to go do something fantastically stupid. And if you listen very carefully, not that carefully, you can hear me doing a passable according to my friends in Milwaukee accent, because it's not meant to be Milwaukee. It's like Ohio, Illinois area. Yeah, but to take which is weird because it's like it's a meeting of accents. It really is. It's like, what if we took like stuff from like upstate New York and then we took stuff from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and then we put it together, and then we didn't really do anything with either of them.
That's what you want to do. It's the whole thing of they would say, I have no accent.
Exactly.
While they have, but you're like, well, you're like, you have an accent.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to overthrow the authoritarian government. I want a revolution.
I'm sorry, we're listening again. Yeah.
John, I also want
hard same, John. Carlson. Hard same.
Ben. Cries in Florida.
Fine. We don't go in fighting.
I do like that for all of what's about to go down, John tried. He tried. In the beginning of this, he tried. He under, like, there was clearly a part of him that his son could still reach.
Yeah.
Right up until he just lost, in a minute, he bamps out.
But that is the whole, congrats.
Jordan Peele, congratulations, you watched the movie.
That's the whole point. That is the point, is that somebody can have the best of intentions and somebody can come at a problem with the pure concern for their fellow man and be legitimately worried about the state of their country and the state of the world that they live in and the things, the ultimate goals they want are things that if you saw that, you'd be like, wow, what an altruistic, perfect, like, great person, so well-intentioned. They care about their fellow man. They're a humanitarian. But then when the time comes to actually do the do, the revolution is violent.
Yeah.
Anytime you're overthrowing, and get on my little socialist soapbox.
That's fine. Real quick, though. Hey, thanks, Jordan, for being awesome. We have Jordan Gottlieb in the episode. So it's JB 40. And then I think
there's quite a few people. Like me,
and then Aiden Rudd. Yeah. So it's like there's like four of us all just doing this really good crowd scene. I liked this episode.
I really like this little crowd scene right here. Like, really tugged my heartstrings to think these people who are getting like their 5 minutes with their loved one who's been put into prison for completely arbitrary political prison. You know, it's kind of like the people who live on the border. Oh no, I'm getting political
again.
Okay.
It's all right. Get on your socialist soapbox. Start talking. It's fine. This is where you shine.
People who try to just come over to the border in a legal fashion, but then are thrown into prison because they were brown. And a white person coming over in an illegal fashion does not have the same thing happen to them. So when the brown people's families who are already Americans have to go to try to visit them, this is political commentary. This whole episode is political commentary.
Congratulations. All art is political.
I'm a highly political person. Hi.
Well, to be fair, you did go and you actually have a degree in history. So,
I do.
And a lot of it was you focused heavily on.
A lot of my focus in college was on the Troubles.
Yes. Yeah.
And on the fall of the Soviet bloc.
Right. Yeah. So you are very intimately acquainted with, acquainted with.
I studied with late both, 20th century history.
Yeah. With both,
which is a very violent.
Yes.
Individual-led revolution.
And then
period.
I'm the rat here.
Yeah, you are the rat.
I'm the rat. It's fine. I didn't want to give that to anybody else. For one thing, I had one of those weird moments where I was like, well, I know how I want it to sound in my head, so I'm just going to do it because it's a bit roll. But also, like, I wanted, like, I didn't want to make anybody else a bad guy.
I feel bad asking people, like, to do, like, things like that Ted, I know are just cowardly acts.
Like, Ted Hazard and Chris Remo, at least, they're, like, playing bad guys. They're getting to be stewards of bad guys.
It's one thing to ask somebody to play a villain, right? A villain is a villain. You can dislike a villain but love playing a villain. It is another thing to ask a person to play a cowardly, average person.
Yeah.
Or, like, a desperate.
And it's definitely a case of all of these people.
Cowardice.
Absolutely, because all the people that we that you're listening to, they all have very real reasons why they're there.
Hang on. It's you know what it is? It's asking somebody to play an SS officer versus asking somebody to play an average German during World War II.
There you go. Yeah.
One of those things is easy to wrap your brain around, and one of those things is harder because you're asking compliance.
Yep.
The woman that you played's crime is compliance with a fascist regime, but that is societally.
Oh no! Sorry, it's the part that made me cry. It's making me cry again.
Oh no! Did you hear it?
I heard their voice crack. Ben has this beautiful crack in his voice when he says, "Stop! You're killing them," and "Are you getting them killed?" And it's just it breaks my heart every time.
Damn it.
Breaks my heart every
time. Man, this episode really is about the, at what point are do you become okay with the revolution being a violent thing?
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is the moment where all of the decisions you've heard finally come to bear.
Yeah. And it's...
Oh, Aiden, thank you for that, by the way. He does such an amazing job here.
For our characters, it is a question of, is the best way to fight the stewards with violence? Especially now that they know the stewards are demonically controlled. Kat is crying right now, guys. That's why I'm talking. But
I'm fine, really.
Oh, baby.
It's okay. No, it's just Aiden and Ben do such an amazing job there, and it's
we
just
have really, really great actors. Like, we have insane actors.
You can actually picture it, and that's the hard part, is knowing that this man that Ben doesn't know,
yeah,
who was talking about how, yeah, kids are allowed to have opinions, it's not a big deal, and at the end of the day, it didn't matter what Ben's opinions were. This guy was going to make sure Ben didn't have to die.
Yep.
That's rough. Hey, you know what? So, and then we've got Paul coming in with the humor to make me feel a little better, which is nice.
This is
so.
A nice little scene.
I mean, come on, Sam, what gives? I mean, your any scene with Avalon. Sam and
you're like the guy to
Leo.
Go for picking
you're like the guy. God.
Leo is literally the breath of fresh air.
Yeah,
like that's his
I want to say. I want to say that we actually had that conversation while I was writing this.
Yes.
I was like, man, I feel bad. I've given like Paul like
no, that's
nothing but banter to do. And then you looked at me and you were like, but that's the point.
Yeah,
you always need one good guy who doesn't actually need to grow in this episode.
Yeah,
and the only thing that he really shows is he starts to express how he feels about Sam and about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's some really sweet stuff that comes up.
And if we had any trouble,
next episode, and I think in 20.
Just because I don't walk around flashing it at them doesn't mean it's not still on me.
Honestly, a key fob.
You know,
says the guy who used to wear a literal medallion under his shirt.
I love this. I just love the scene.
I'll take the key ring any day.
But point no, is, they
I didn't want to be out here. With
I liked the idea of giving.
All I've ever done.
Sam and Leo more time to talk because in the first show I don't think they had a single scene together other than like the big battle scene. But it makes perfect sense. I mean, so for anyone who doesn't quite remember because it's been a hot minute, the history around the families here.
Yeah.
So Timothy Arthur and Kerry Arthur are brother and sister. Tim is obviously King Arthur. His uncle Jacob.
Yep.
You may remember from the flashback sequences as the last Exodus Avalon.
Yep.
He was the Exodus that was with Francesca, Asara's mentor. And Jake was the... did we actually talk about that? I think we did.
Yeah, we did.
Jake is the basically adopted father of Sam.
Yeah.
Sam was an orphan. So, yeah. Sam was an orphan. So his sister Annie is his actual sister, but they were clearly like fostered and adopted by Jake. So Sam had no clue he had any connection to this family.
Yeah.
But listen, in the 6 years since,
he has learned.
He has obviously learned all of that, and he has obviously become an integral part of the larger communal family that is the Court of the Round Table. Because we've done this really awesome thing of it's kind of like Star Trek Voyager, you guys. I'm gonna bring back Star Trek today. It's kind of the whole chosen family thing. If you've got people from all over the world who come together for this one purpose together. And over time, they've formed familial bonds that are different than your static nuclear family. You've got Alicia and Jack who see Sam and Jaina as some variation of parent. You've got Jaina and Sam who have totally different opinions about where they land with that. And then you've got Olivia and Tim who are sort of also running a different familial sort of bond between characters. And it's just... It's really warm, nice. It's like a big giant hug. But then I like that we got a chance to actually have Leo and Sam talk in a way that shows that they're equals. And like Leo's like, get off your ass, dude.
Yeah.
Get off your ass.
Like if you were to look at it in kind of like a royal court type situation, you've got the priest talking to one of the chief advisors.
Pretty much, yeah.
They're societally equal.
Yeah, exactly.
And they both serve similar functions for the king.
Yeah.
But also for each other.
They do.
Well,
I'll get this back up right.
It was also really nice to have her as have Jaina as Avalon here.
Oh, just like
walking around doing Avalon doing shit. Avalon it's so stuff. Cool.
Yeah.
Grant me the skill of your also, I mean, anybody, anybody who's ever listened to the show knows you don't need a reason to enjoy listening to Laura play Avalon. She just sounds so good.
That Avalon voice
is so good. So it was really nice to have her and Sam have this argument where she's Avalon. She's in costume. Like, she's in her armor. She's just been walking around hauling pallets of shit like it's nothing. And he's like, I'm Sam Tyler.
He has a complicated fracture. The surrounding tissue is affected.
Again, there's a lot of medical, I'm not going to call it jargon. It's like trivia. Like, everything I've written is technically correct. Medically, that is exactly what happened. But if you didn't know that, that's like a cool bit of trivia you now know. There's a difference between a compound fracture and a complicated fracture. And
This has been triage first aid by Catherine.
This has been medical facts by Cat.
What's all this?
But
apparently this hospital had water lines.
I liked the idea of like, so we started the conversation. We always knew they were going to go do this. This was always in the outline that they were going to go to a hospital.
Yep.
I think the folks they were going to be with were a little different. Overall, we wound up going with this patch, this group, because I felt like it was the best for the dynamics of who we had and had not seen together and the characters who made most sense, like having Evan there, obviously.
Oh, that's some bloody.
Sorry, I just got totally distracted by David being David and just sounding so sassy. You know I love you, David. But I liked the idea of showing you, the audience, like physically how run down hospitals are. So, and I mean, we don't talk about it enough. So there is a very real medical crisis happening in a lot of flyover states in the U.S. right now. It's so bad that we actually have Doctors Without Borders
actively activated
in the U.S. Yeah, they're
as if it is a third world country.
Exactly. And one of the states in question is Idaho. If you are a woman who's planning to have a child in Idaho, I would be worried.
Yeah.
There is nowhere for you to go should there be a complication. Without delving into that subject matter, because I think, I mean, I don't need to say it, but I'll go ahead and say it. Bodily autonomy is a thing, and women should be allowed to have it, and nobody should be making that decision except her and her doctor. Oh my God, I can't believe we're still saying this. The idea that we take hospitals for granted, even when we are far away from them, we take them for granted. We expect there's going to be a hospital somewhere. And especially if you're a city person, you expect there to be a hospital. Here where we are, there's at least, I can't throw a stone without running into a hospital within 15 miles.
We have three major hospital systems within just Orlando.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's systems. That's multiple hospitals, multiple offices, ERs, multiple care practices, multiple, you know, radiology department stuff. But what people don't talk about is they are privately run.
Mm-hmm.
There are shareholders. There are hedge funds involved. Public hospitals are not what we think they are anymore. And the sad reality is, if you were to watch all those hedge funds pull up their stakes right now, the hospital that they're in, that's a very real problem. That's a reality. Is hospitals are already sorely I'm not going to say underfunded. They allocate funds poorly because they allocate them to the top and not to the people who need it. But I wanted to be able to kind of show like the real world kind of like complications of that. So. And then meanwhile, Casey just had a dose of WTF.
Yeah.
And don't worry, I know that's a question that you're all having. You're all like, well, I don't remember Casey having precognition powers. Oh.
She did.
We'll get into it.
We'll get into
in episode 18 where we actually fully.
Well, I think we've talked about it a little bit. It gets really talked about.
But
later.
It's everything. You know, it's a whole thing. Everything's coming to a point.
Yes.
And I would say it's like it's coming up to the end of the hill, and then you're gonna drop. But no, this is like being on Rip Ride Rocket, and you think you've made it to the top.
It just keeps going.
And it just keeps going. Nope. And it's straight up. It's just straight up. And you're staring at the sky going, why am I on this ride? I don't care how much I like Motley Crue. What was I thinking?
This is being halfway through Slinky Dog Dash sitting next to your nephew.
There's more!
Yes. Secondary launches.
Yes, secondary launch, exactly.
I tried to stop.
But,
Oh my god, this scene right here hurts me so bad. It's so good.
Again, Ben, you acted the hell out of this episode, man.
Something really wrong.
Just.
Ugh. I'm so sorry. I couldn't.
Yeah, just. I can't. Like, there's nothing to be said here. I mean, just.
No, it hurts me. I'm crying right now. It hurts me. I cried when I did the transcript. I had to, like, keep pausing the transcript and rubbing my face. And we're sitting in a public cafe because that's where
I do. Where you were. And you were like,
we're, like, at a chocolate cafe and I'm sitting here with my, like, cup of hot chocolate, like, pushing at my face to try to push the tears back into my eyes as I'm typing the transcript. And Kat's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, Ben!
And I'm like, that's just the whole episode. It's just Ben crying.
Hey, so you made it through another episode of liberal politics with Chris and Kat.
Woo! I mean, again, it's the, how did you not know by this point?
You can reach us on the social medias.
Yes, if you would like to speak with us, I am on Threads. I am Kat underscore Avalon underscore Pride. Don't ask me. It was a long story. For some reason, Genesis Avalon's not available on Threads.
I still think that's my fault. I need to figure that out.
And then also, Chris, you're also on Threads as well. Something related to that. And then if you already follow us on Facebook or Discord, please, please, absolutely. I love having conversations about the political stuff and about all the stuff that's going on. I'm really bad at checking Discord, but please don't let that be a reason not to have the discussion. I will chip in as soon as I see it. And that doesn't matter if it's 2 weeks from now. I'll chip in.
I will chip in eventually.
So, but yeah, let us know what you think. Follow us on,
Tell your friends.
Yeah, please tell your friends.
Evangelize our show.
I don't normally advocate for that, but in this case I do. So, see you next month.
See you next time.